The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest." Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them the authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Go nowhere among the Gentiles, and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news: the kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment." The Gospel of the Lord. I've been studying Scripture now for a few decades, and many times throughout my preaching career, I've made the statement that God has got absolute power, that he can do anything he wants. There's nothing that God is not able to accomplish just literally at the snap of his fingers. But I've come to realize that I may have been wrong. I believe now I do know something that God cannot do. I even cringe at the thought of saying that he is powerless in this one area, but I have no choice but to stick with it, and I'm hoping that it works out. But I will tell you what that is at the end of this homily. Some things have lingered in my mind for years. I've sat there and I've thought, how does God make these decisions in life when he chooses this person versus that person or this nation? Or how does he go about choosing his rules or making his decisions on anything? And one of them that was sticking in my mind for a long time is, why did he choose the Israelites over lots of other different nations that he could have chose? Why the Israelites? Literally, they were powerless. They had no military. They barely had a religious leadership. They had no influence on anybody or any other nation. So why did God suddenly say, "Well, okay, that'll be my favorite group. I'm going to go get them"? You know, there was lots of other nations that he could have chose who would have been much more militarily powerful to do what God wanted done. And he could have converted them in the snap of his fingers. But he chose the Israelites. And why? Well, it's not the only reason, but one of the reasons that he did choose the Israelites was because they had no military. They were powerless. They had no influence. That's the very reason that he chose them. Because if they struck up a battle against the Egyptians would have wiped them out that same afternoon. There was no comparison of the military strength of the two nations. But he chose them because of their weakness, because they were nobody on the front page. They were nobody in the realm of the powerful nations. Because after he chose them, anything that's good is about to happen to these Israelites cannot be contributed to human nature. It is by the power of God that they are doing it. that they succeed because of the power of God. That's it. There's no discussion anymore. So what does he do? He delivers all these different signs and these plagues and everything else to the Egyptians. And finally, they're literally on their way out of town. They're let go. And the Egyptians want to get rid of them. And the Israelites did nothing in this time frame, only God. Then when you get to the Red Sea, what happens? Well, the Red Sea parts, and they were allowed to cross. But in the meantime, the Egyptians are hot in pursuit. And what does God say? Just stand back and watch. I'm going to deal with this. Because the battle was not between Israel and Egypt. It was between God and the Pharaoh. And God was going to show how much power he had. The Israelites never even picked up a stone to throw at him, and the war was over. They were wiped out within the hour. God's power prevailed, and nobody can take that away from him, that it was him and him alone. Now they're out into the desert, and they're wandering around, and God is their supplier. He feeds them. He teaches them. He's their leader. He's their military leader. When they get to the promised land, he tells them what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. He is their captain. He is their chief, if you want to call it that. He's the one that directed them. And it was the power of God, again, that helped them prevail through all the enemies that they took on, providing they listened to him. Now we go to the next reading. And St. Paul is talking, and he's teaching, and he's got his letters, and we read his letters. Why did he choose St. Paul to be this person? Think about who Paul was. He was Saul before this. He was the enemy of the church. This guy was the enemy of the church. The last prospect we could ever even think of to be a representative of the church is Saul. Until he meets Jesus face to face and he converts. And now he becomes the catalyst towards the church. This guy becomes a major influence to the Canaanites and throughout the world. We still read his letters today. Again, somebody that was absolutely an unbelievable choice, and God chooses him, and what does he do with it? Now we go to the gospel, and God, what is Jesus doing? He's choosing his 12 apostles out of the disciples. I'll take this moment to explain the difference. A disciple is somebody that chooses. They choose who they're going to follow. They choose their master. They chose Jesus. And now they become a student of Jesus, and they are learning from him and developing themselves from his teachings. An apostle, Jesus chooses. They don't choose Jesus. Jesus chooses them. That's the difference. And now they're going to be taught and given a mandate. They're going to be given some instruction. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go out and do this, and you're going to do that. Who are these 12 guys? Well, tax collectors, they were mostly fishermen. Now think about this for a second. One day you're a fisherman, the next day you're raising the dead. This is quite an evolution. This just isn't normal. The fishermen didn't do this on their own. This is the work of God. God took the most unlikely 12 people to be church leaders and put them in a position, and what did they do? They changed the world. Jesus now goes and gives his life up on the cross. He's crucified on the cross. For what? For the few people standing around at the base of his cross, or the guys about 100 yards over that are watching from a distance? No. Jesus gave himself up on the cross for the world. The entire world. Why did Jesus take the Israelites out of Egypt and do what he did with them? It wasn't just for the Israelites. Yes, they're part of it. But it was for the world that he did that. Why did he change Paul's heart and get him to lead the church after being a persecutor of the church? It was partly due for Paul's sake alone, but it was for the world that he did it. The apostles, why did he choose them? Yes, there again, part of the solution to this, but that is not the only reason. The apostles were put in place for the world, and we still read and learn from them today. God's plan was in motion the entire time. And what is he trying to do? He's trying to do things for the world. And when he put those 12 apostles in place, what is he doing? He is multiplying his efforts and sending it out in a multitude of different directions to different countries. And he spreads his teachings and his power amongst the nations, not just a small group of people that he was dealing with. It was for the world that he did that. Now let's see. Have I forgotten anything? Us. What about us? Where do we fit into this? Well, we have the leadership already. We already have the teachings. Now we have to do something about it. It's up to us now to take that word out. Just like the apostles, just like Paul, just like the Israelites, we're now put into position that we have to spread the word. Providing we listen to God, and he does not want us to keep it to ourselves. He wants us to send it out. He wants us to be his voice in the world. This is not an accident. What was it that I found that God cannot do? And again, I feel, you would not believe the feeling inside of me just saying those words, because that feels threatening to me to even suggest that God can't do something. But I honestly don't think he can do this one thing. Even God can't steer a parked car. And if we've got the emergency brake on and we're dead stopped, he can't do anything with us. We have to be in motion for him to be able to steer us in the right direction. God will do the work, but we have to do the legwork. We're the ones that have to put ourselves into motion, and then he'll tell us what to do. He'll direct us, and it'll guide us by the power of God. None of us are capable of doing that on our own, and neither was anybody else. Take the parking brake off.
Let us profess our faith in God.